You're not gonna say it, somebody should. Let's talk about two time. Let's talk about bum one, yeah. Asking the questions that nobody could. Like, where are the bone thugs and are they in harmony? You're a helpful snowman.
Hey, podcast fans. Hey, it's you. It's me.
It's us.
Oh my God. I saw Charles Martinet is going to be at Denver Comic Con. For those of you who don't know, Charles Martinet is the It's-a-me, Mario guy. And I just wonder, like, I wonder if he fucking hates that, you know, because probably most of the people who go up to talk to him are like, so say the thing. I would probably just be like, put up a little sign. Signed picture this much. If you want me to say it's a me Mario, $5,000. I'll leave your outgoing voicemail message for this much. I have five choices you can pick from. And then if you want me to say some crazy shit, you know, I'll say anything for a couple $100. I will say anything in the world and then deny it later. You know, like, I wouldn't want to go up to him. Well, I would want to, but I know I'm not going to go up to him and have him be like, it's a me, Charles Martinet. Listen to Helpful Snowman. Oh, or something like that. I don't think that's going to work. Anyway, that was a stirring topic, huh? For everyone who's a big fan of Charles Martinet. The Frenchman who speaks in English to do an Italian Mario. There you go. Well, I decided to start a podcast beef, a minor one, right now. And drum roll, who am I starting a beef with? Which show? Serial? No, not Serial. I'm completely blanking on other shows right now. History Hour of the Times with Charles Grodin. What's that show I'm thinking of? You know, the history one. The history one where the guy is like always talking about history. I know I have it very wrong. Also, isn't Charles Grodin is not the guy. I don't think his name is Charles or Grodin. Fuck. Well, you know what I'm talking about. Stuff, history stuff you didn't know. Fuck. Who cares? You know, with Mr. I was about to say with Mr. and then talk about my high school history teacher, and then I was like, I can't remember that guy. Mr. Shaw! With Brett Shaw. Brett Shaw was my high school history teacher. And Brett Shaw was probably like in his 40s or 50s. And one time, my older brother, so we shared a car. My older brother had a bad habit of leaving the lights on when we were going to school. And then it was, you know, rainy or cloudy and he'd have the lights on and then not turning them off. So by the end of the day, the car battery was thoroughly dead and whatever. So there was this one day. I distinctly remember we get to school and we're walking in and he goes like, oh man, I don't remember if I turned the lights off. I was going to say, he said, fuck, I don't remember if I turned the lights off, but I don't know if he would have said that. And I was like, why don't you just go check? And he's like, no, I turned them off. And then I was like, why don't you check? And he was like, no, I turned them off. And he got really pissed with me. You know, because when you're fucking brothers, it's always just sort of like your brother's the last person in high school that you want to be like doubting you or questioning you. So I was like, all right, fuck it. He's going to get all pissed, whatever. Because at the time, I wasn't smart enough to be like, you know, you got to go home in that car too. So, of course, he'd left the lights on that day because that was the day he thought maybe he had, and then he hadn't. So, of course, he had. And we got a jump from somebody at the school. And so we were able to get, a half mile from the school or something, but we hadn't been driving long enough to recharge the battery, so the car died again. So we're sitting there on the side of the road, and someone was coming to give us a jump. And Mr. Shaw comes up, and he drove a beater. His car might have been worse than ours, which was saying something. I mean, ours was a 1981 or 82 Toyota wagon, which one time my brother got out of a ticket because it was a brown car, but it was like they had put the color as the wrong color somewhere, like a parking ticket. I think they'd said it was gold, which there were some patches that looked oddly gold because the paint had worn off, and so you're seeing the metal shine through from underneath. And anyway, he got out of a ticket. This car was like, it was great. It lasted us a long ass time, but it was not a prime specimen. You know what I mean? It wasn't like Jake Leeser's Jake Leeser's fully restored Mustang, right? And he was driving around the end of high school. So Mr. Shaw pulls up, and Mr. Shaw, his car was famously featured in our high school newspaper. Used to have this little section called Junkyard Treasures. And basically they'd go out into the parking lot and find the shittiest looking car, take a couple pictures, and then ask the owner some questions about it. You know, just like, where'd you get it? What's going on? And his was famously featured in that, especially because in one of the back seats, there was a hole in the floor to where you could just watch the road passing by beneath you. I mean, it was crazy. This column listed all the problems with this car, and it was like, how is this even road legal? It probably isn't. Isn't it funny, though, that, like, you go get your emissions done or whatever, but it's not like someone ever kind of takes a walk around your car and is like, wait a second. Like, this cars need to have a floor, sir. So he pulls up, and we're sitting there, and he's like, hey, do you need me to get somebody or something? And I was like, no, we got somebody calling. And I think I made some crack about his car, about how, like, well, what are you going to do, drive us away in your car? We're only going to make it another block. And then he said, well, at least mine's running. And then he drove away. And I was like, yeah, he had me there. Boy, did he have me there. This was before, you know, I would learn to respect the idea of, like, maybe I'm not going to buy a new car until I absolutely need to, because I don't want to work until I'm 84 years old, which is, you know, current Pete, very much in his statements, ideals. I don't know how we got from beef about podcasting to this. Oh, okay, I do. Talking about history teacher, my history teacher, Ben something? I don't know. My podcast beef is with Lore's Aaron Mankey. And I'll tell you why. A few weeks ago, or I don't know, I guess it was probably only a week ago. I know this is a really important detail that I should go back and forth on until I have it down to the exact number of days. Some time ago, I saw a retweet of one of his tweets, which was about something he saw posted by the Sword and Scale podcast. Now, this is getting pretty podcast nerd, so get ready. Sword and Scale apparently posted some, it looked like a SpongeBob meme that was some meme about, like, you know, sex slaves or something like that, right? And it was a joke. And it was not a joke that's in good taste. It's not a joke that I would want to explain to my grandma. But, you know, if... I don't know. It was obviously a joke, and it was not in great taste, but it didn't seem like a joke that I would be totally opposed to existing or anything like that, right? So Aaron Mankey, his tweet was something along the lines of, like, I care about podcasting a lot as a podcaster, and you know, I think this is like horrific because it's like making fun of people who've been sex trafficked or something, or sex trafficking. And he was like, and I know what's going to happen is Sword and Scale is just going to be like, oh, it's just a joke, lighten up, because they've done this sort of thing many times before. And he was like, well, I think that we should go to whatever network or thing they're a part of and, you know, tell them that we're not going to listen to Sword and Scale, or like tell them like, hey, you should get this person under control or whatever. And then about a week later, he retweeted or subtweeted or whatever, put out a tweet about like, hey, it looks like at whoever runs that show, like whatever company or network they're on is still running them. Maybe we should keep talking about it. And I was kind of like, well, I think Aaron Mankey is being disingenuous. All right, let me just talk about why. Number one, I don't really like when people start any statement with, you know, as a something. Like when they're like, I'm going to throw my credentials in here so everyone knows, you know, why. It's like, why do I give a fuck what Aaron Mankey says about this? And then I have to be like, oh, because he's a podcaster. So that means he's the authority on which jokes are good and not good to make. It's like this false thing he's doing, because basically, if someone was saying what this podcast is doing as a whole is unethical or bad or something, and here's why I know why, because I am a podcaster doing the same thing, I'd be like, that means something. But when he's like, post their jokes that I don't like are bad, and I'm qualified to judge that because I engage in a similar career to the person who made the joke, that doesn't really fly for me. But that's really just the beginning of it. I have a problem with, I think it's a little bit hypocritical for Aaron Mankey, host of Lore, to say that somebody else is being naughty because they are creating entertainment out of bad things that have happened to people. Because that is what Lore does too. Now Lore, I'm sure Aaron Mankey would be talking about how, like, well, there's a huge difference because I always make sure and, you know, respect the people that I'm talking about and respect their stories and so on and so forth, which I'm like, I agree. There is a difference. And I don't think that, I'm not saying you're the same, but what I am saying is Aaron Mankey also traffics in horrific things that have happened to real human beings and has created entertainment and a career out of talking about the horrible things that have happened to other human beings. And so it's a little hypocritical to me, because I think that for him to say that is kind of saying there's one way to do this and it's my way. And, you know, I was once a, well, this is sort of a different point. My point is, like, it's a little hypocritical in my eyes, because I just think, like, they're covering the same beat and they're doing it in a different way. It's a little bit like, you know, when you see political coverage, right? And it's like, okay, well, this side is getting a lot of mileage out of defending Trump all the time, or talking about, you know, this side is getting a lot of mileage about talking about, like, these college campuses are out of control and so on and so forth. But, and, you know, we make fun of them and whatever. But, I mean, the other side is also making some serious hay out of, like, oh, my God, can you believe Donald Trump did this time? And I'm like, sometimes I'm like, yeah, that's pretty outrageous. And sometimes I'm like, I mean, I don't know. That's not one that lights my fire, no. So the point being, I think that we all sort of choose the realm in which we're going to, like, make our hay, as we'd say. And Aaron Mankey has chosen a realm that involves creating something out of the suffering of other real people. Now, let me be clear about something, because obviously I don't have a problem with that. right? I mean, I do Potoween. It's not nearly as big of a thing, and it's not nearly as whatever. And I don't have a problem with people doing it different ways. Like, I don't think the way Aaron Mankey does it is wrong, but I don't necessarily think the way Sword and Scale does it is wrong either. Because I think that the thing is like, well, A, I think something that's good about podcasting is it's relatively free market. As entertainment markets go, I think podcasting is one of the freer markets that exists. Because for, you know, it's got a low ceiling to entry, a low bar, and all you have to do is find someone who knows how to set it up, and it would not take you very long to set up your own podcast. And so I think that sort of like free market thing is a good thing to have in entertainment. I think a relatively free market is a good thing because I don't know. I'm not a big censorship guy, as you might know from listening to this. So I think it's wrong to say this voice should not exist in this realm. Like, this entire platform this person should be deplatformed because I don't like what they're saying and I don't like the way they're dealing with it. I think that's wrong. I also think it's a little bit extra gross coming from Aaron Mankey. Because I think Aaron Mankey, I would put as someone who has quote unquote made it in podcasting. By which I mean, like, you know, his show is fairly big. It's fairly well known. I'm sure he's making some money off of it. I know he's got an Amazon show. They did books, you know. And I'm not like fooling myself into thinking like he's probably pulling down $250,000 a year. Like, I have no idea. I'm sure he probably has some kind of Patreon or something, or subscription, whatever. But I'm not saying he's a billionaire, but I am saying that I think Lore has probably hit bigger than Sword and Scale overall. But I think there's a possibility that Sword and Scale has also found an audience, and that's an audience that somewhat likes what Lore does, but likes what Sword and Scale does better. And I really do think that this may be business acumen disguised as moral outrage. I also accuse. I would also accuse Aaron Mankey of, you know, he's got this level of fame, and I'm sure he deals with criticism about the way he's found his fame. And I think this is a way for him to deal with it very simply, which is to distance himself from the other shows who are doing it quote-unquote wrong. To be like, well, here's how I do it differently, and I find what this podcast is doing to be awful. You know, I think it's a terrible, terrible point of view. I think it's a terrible perspective, and I don't like it. I don't like it. It offends my sensibilities. And therefore, we should take away its ability to exist. And that's the part that really pisses me off. That's the part where I go into, like, now you're kind of being an asshole. I mean, punching down is one thing, and I do think that him doing that is punching down. And punching down is, like, never a good look. It doesn't really matter who you are. The only time that punching down has been a good look is when Buzz Aldrin punched that idiot who was accusing him of not going to the moon. Because, like, yeah, morally, Buzz Aldrin's on the high ground there, but that guy was all up in his face, and also, fuck that guy. I am not an advocate of violence, but I was like, you're in this old man's face telling him he never went to the moon and why is he lying about it, and you wouldn't get out of his way, and so he socked you one. Fuck off. Also, in my eyes, Buzz Aldrin walked on the moon. He can punch whoever he wants. He's above us. Literally. So, punching down doesn't look good, and that's a problem. But I think the bigger thing is, like, the attempt to go after Sword and Scale as, like, financially. And, like, to deplatform them and make it so it's like, why don't we just make it so they cannot exist in this market? Which pisses me off. Because the beauty of like a freer market, I'm calling it a free-ish freer market because I know it's not like, I probably couldn't be like, well, here's my fucking podcast about some illegal topic that's horribly illegal and whatever. You know, I probably wouldn't. If you did, I'm sure if you did like a, I remember I was trying to find a white power podcast and you couldn't really find them on iTunes and stuff. I was only able to find some on like their own websites and they were pretty stupid. But anyway, free-ish freer, part of the beauty of it is like, if I don't like something, here's what I should do. Here's what Aaron Mankey should do if he doesn't like what Sword and Scale does. He should do it the way he thinks is right, and he should do it so well that what he's doing is undeniably better. That, like, you know, listeners listen to Sword and Scale and they listen to Lore, and when they listen to Lore, they're like, I like this better because I feel like it's more respectful of the victims, and that allows me to enjoy the entertainment value of it more. You know, or like, I feel icky when I listen to Sword and Scale because they make fun of people or they make fun of this and they kind of treat it more lightheartedly than I think is right. And so I'm going to stick with Lore. That's for me. Do such a fucking good job that people just pick you anyway. I mean, he's got the platform. He's got the thing, right? It's sort of like, you know, a lot of beefs between rappers back in the day when I paid attention to such things would be basically somebody trying to start a beef with like an Eminem or a Jay-Z. This is like, I don't know, early 2000s maybe. Because that was the big guy. And so you're like, if I can get this guy to basically squabble with me in some way, is that, I'm sure that's a word they used a lot. Squabble, robble, robble. Oh my God, Jay-Z is in trouble. There you go. That's my diss track for Jay-Z. Beyonce. That's too hard for her. Beyonce, I can't say. I almost, well, yeah, okay, anyway. That's what you would do. You would attack, you'd punch up, because then in the hopes that they would punch down, and that gets you more attention. But I think punching down, it doesn't work that way. Eminem cannot make a diss track about some fucking unknown rapper once he's super famous, because it's like, well, who fucking cares? And all that, the only thing that's going to do is raise that person's profile, right? Like, it's not going to hurt that person to have a super famous artist even say their fucking name. So I think that's another aspect of this that I'm like, I don't know if Aaron Mankey knows what he's doing. Because, like, by doing that, I think that it's trying to call something out, but I think it may actually be highlighting something else that you don't want to highlight. But I think that's, like, the biggest thing for me is that the podcasting world is, like, limitless space-wise. I mean, we have not hit, it's not like iTunes or something has been like, well, we've hit the amount of podcasts we're willing to have on our store. You know, or the internet is like, well, we're full. The internet is full, everyone. So we can't put anything up. No more pictures. No more teachers. No more books. No more pencils. No more books. No more teachers' dirty looks. Nothing. No Alice Cooper songs anymore. Make some new music? Fuck yourself. We's full. That's not happening, right? There's plenty of room for everyone. So all you have to do is fucking, when you don't like that shit, when you're against it, you don't have to, like, go, this should not exist. I mean, I talk a lot of smack about things. Or, you know, I'll talk about books on Goodreads that I do not like, and I will talk very frankly about why I do not like them and why I think they failed. But I don't say, like, this person should be fired. We should find this person and get them out of here. You know, even when it's something that I find offensive, I'm not going to do that. I'll tell you all, you know, listeners of the show, I found something a little bit offensive. the other day. So for the last couple weeks, I've been editing for Lit Reactor. And so that involves, like, people put up their columns. I have to edit them, put in the images, do all that stuff, right? Make sure shit is spelled correctly, so on. And a lot of it is formatting, Amazon links, so on. And so one of the writers there wrote this. It was like a humor column about here are books you should give to, like, your enemies. Because it's basically like, and, you know, it would go through types of people. You know, it'd be like, okay, so if you know someone who's a racist, give them this book. You know, if you know someone who's such and such, give them this book, right? And I noticed that all the books were by white people. I think there were like 6 books and they were 100% by white people. And only one or two of them were by women. I know E.L. James, 50 Shades of Grey was on there. There might have been one other lady. But they were all white people. And almost all white guys. And I was like, so this is something interesting. Because if you write a column on there and you talk about good things, things that are good, you know, if I was like 6 great gifts to give this year that are books. And I did. I wrote a column about like books that make really good gifts because they're kind of like one of a kind, or, you know, the physical properties of the book are essential to the reading experience and therefore it makes a good gift. And I had to be careful and go to some, you know, extra lengths to find some people who weren't like white guys, right? And that's fine. Like, that does not bother me. And I think that's a good thing to do. And a lot of times when I do that, I find other things that I would like to read. However, when we're talking about something negative, it's fine. We can just have 6 white people. And no one complains. No one's like, "This is, you don't think this is a little racist?" Because you're basically... The implication, if I put up like the 10 best detective novels I read this year and they're all by white people, it would be like, so you think only white people write good detective novels, right? But it doesn't work the other way, where it's like, so you think the worst books, all bad books are written by white people then? Because that's the implication if one chose to look at it that way. And one could choose to look at it that way. And, like, I saw it, and I felt this, you know, because I was like, well, this isn't right. Because it's not right to that. It's not right to me to make that implication. Or to not have to be careful about that. I'll give you another. Here's an interesting example. I was writing this column. I think it was a column where I was saying, like, if classic books ended like action movies. So it was like a very jokey column, right? And I took a lot of classic literature and just kind of made these jokes about it, right? And I was trying to find books, you know, but I was like, all right, well, I'm not going to do like Beloved, right? I can't end that like an action movie, even though I was immediately going to like a Dark Man type of ending. Oh, the baby didn't really die, so on and so forth. But I was like, you can't do Beloved because you can't fucking make fun of that, right? And so it was very difficult as I was going through because I was like, well, okay. On the one hand, I want books by people who aren't like white dudes to be able to play, right? Like, we're having fun. We're joking about these books. So books by other people should be able to be in this as well, right? Like, that should be... It's this weird thing of, like, am I making fun of the books, or am I making fun of the people, or am I making fun of action movies? And it's kind of a little of all of the above. But the reason it's, like, classic books, right, is because I feel, you know, classic books are cemented in the culture enough that my little column about them is not going to hurt. People are still going to fucking buy and read Frankenstein. I don't think my column is going to cause one person to be like, LOL, now I don't need to buy Frankenstein, right? And I don't think if I had put Beloved in there, it would either. But I know this is a touchy thing to do, so I just didn't do it. But I felt like it's kind of a missed opportunity because, and I don't think it was Beloved. I'm trying to remember what the other book was. But the point was, those books didn't get to play. Those authors didn't get to be part of this because I was like, you know, it's not worth it. It's not worth it to have a bunch of people fucking tweeting at me and emailing and commenting on the thing of like how racist it is because you made fun of this book. But, you know, so then when I look the other way and I'm like, oh, well, it's okay. It's, you know, I can do the same thing, right? I can make fun of all white people books and that's fine. But, you know, if I step outside of that, watch out. Anyway, that was something I guess I would say I was offended by in some way. It wasn't like deep offense. It didn't like ruin my day. I was just like, hey, this is kind of an inconsistent practice. Inconsistent way of doing things. But, you know, so I was offended in that on that level. And I wasn't happy about it. But I wasn't about to, like, email the other people at the website and be like, this shit is fucking racist. And I wasn't about to email the guy who wrote it and be like, hey, there's kind of a racist implication here. Should be careful. I don't know. Do you want to add another book that's not of all biased people of the same race? And also, it like, you know, one of the books is like Mein Kampf, right? And I'm sort of like, if I chose to problematize this, I could certainly look at this and say like, oh, so you're saying that like most books by white people are bad and the equivalent of Mein Kampf. Real cool. So Hitler is like one of the white people that we talk about the most. That's nice. It's a nice thing to talk about. Anyway, point being, I was offended and all I did was ramble about it on a podcast for like way too long. And I'm like, I'm over it. Like, it doesn't really matter. Because that's the ultimate thing, is I was like, you know, that's how I felt when I saw it. But it could be unintentional. It could be intentional. And he's being provocative. I don't know. But it doesn't really matter. Because I don't, it doesn't hurt me in any real way. Like, does it make my life worse that he did that? No, it really doesn't. So fuck it. Who cares? Also, even though it might have been something I didn't like, I was nowhere near trying to be like, fuck this guy, let's get him out of here. He should not have the right to earn here anymore because he did something that offended me, right? So that is a behavior that I'm very against. I'm very against the behavior of like, this person I find offensive and therefore shouldn't be able to talk at all. And I know there's a different argument here of like, you know, should YouTube have to provide the platform for, you know, YouTube's not a free speech vessel, right? And Twitter is not a free speech vessel. Like, they're a private company. They can do whatever the fuck they want. And that's true. And like, I think that's a true thing. Although I also wonder if someday we'll kind of look back and say, you know, it was kind of disingenuous for us to pretend like all these online platforms and think, you know, they're going through a lot of the problems with social media and online platforms right now. And I wonder if they will be like the inequitable ability to use these platforms based on your views seems like maybe it was a problem and something that we hadn't really worked out the ethics of beforehand, and so now we're stuck in this world of this thing. So anyway, let's take it back to Aaron Mankey. Not real impressed with his, like, not only initial anger and, like, initial tweeting about this and attempt to be like, let's get him off this network, but then to come back a week later and be like, let's push it, you know what I mean? Like, seems like they haven't, you know, at whoever hasn't taken down Sword and Scale yet. I found it gross. I found it gross also because I think it was partially inspired by the fact that this thing is doing, like, the same thing that he is. I think there's also just this problem I have with, like, you know, okay, Aaron Mankey did his thing his way, and he found success that way. But now he's trying to set the borders for everyone to do it that way. And I think that's wrong. I don't think that, like, just because someone is successful at doing something themselves does not mean they're a good person to help you do it. I think, like, a great example of this is, you know, if you read articles about fitness online, I have a condition of, not a condition, but just like a body type where it's like, if I stop exercising and stuff, I get thinner, not fatter. Like, I don't really get fat. I just lose weight and become very thin. 99% of exercise stuff online is oriented towards the opposite. People who are like fatter trying to get thinner and or more muscular, not people who are thinner trying to put on a little muscle weight. So, like, you can't really trust most of the advice and gotta strike out on your own way, because every person who posts stuff online posts stuff that's like, well, this is what worked for me. And I'm like, yeah, you know, it's probably not going to work for me. What worked for 8-time Mr. Olympia Ronnie Coleman, who is fucking gigantic. Like, that is not going to work for me. I promise you that. Okay? I cannot do Flex Wheeler's plan. That's not going to happen. Like, it's not going to work. It's not going to give me the results I want. Because, you know, he's like, all right, I want to have a ridiculously huge back. And then I need to put on a ton of weight. I need to eat probably 7 times a day. And then I'm going to cut down, you know, cut out all the liquids and stuff so that skin is just shrink wrapped over the muscles and the veins. And that's how I win Mr. Olympia. Or, you know, that's how I compete. And it's like, well, that's probably not exactly in line with my personal fitness goals. That's not what I'm shooting for, per se. So, you know, but they don't say that. They're just like, you want to get a huge chest? Do this. This is a plan by, you know, C.T. Fletcher came up with this plan. And I'm like, yeah, C.T. Fletcher, if he wasn't working out, would probably be fucking enormous. And, is smaller because he's working out. Or, you know, is more toned, but he would probably still be huge if he didn't work out. Pete would not be. P.D. Dirk would not be C.T. Fletcher. If we both stopped working out, I think we'd go in opposite directions. But I think it works like this with the arts, too. I think that, like, I think it's great when people give advice and when they have advice for people and they're like, well, here's how I did it. You know, take this for what it's worth. I don't know, this won't work for everyone. You know, and like, sometimes by nature of the fact that it worked for me, it doesn't work for you because I did that. So no one's really interested in it anymore. But I don't like when it's the, you're not doing it the way I think it should be done, and therefore you shouldn't be allowed to do it anymore. And, like, you're not doing true crime the way that I do, sort of, I'll call lore true crime adjacent. You're not doing it the way I do it or the way I think it should be done. And therefore, I should decide that you can't talk anymore. You don't get to talk anymore. You don't get to do your thing anymore. Because I don't like it. I don't like what you're doing. So that's why he's my enemy now. He's my podcast nemesis. I'm having my beef with Aaron Mankey because I'm punching up. The beauty of this show is that I don't really know of any shows that are below us. I'm sure there are. I'm sure some show out there is worse than this show. I would challenge anybody to name a show that is worse than this show that they regularly listen to. That they're like, no, this show is way worse. As I say, like, screaming in my car on the way to the fucking airport, right? Where, I don't know, a third of this year's episodes were recorded in this fashion, probably. Just complaining about airline travel. But, yeah, I don't know. Tweet, at me or email me with a podcast that you think is worse than this show. Maybe it's Sword and Scale. But I think that, like, there really is no, and don't give me any ones that are like, you know, I don't know. Ben Shapiro, is that a guy? Is that a guy we don't like? You know, because I don't want to hear that my show is not as bad as, like, what is that, the Alex Jones Meltdown Hour or whatever? Because, like, well, I mean, I thank you for thinking that, but obviously millions of people, what do they say, millions of Elvis fans can't be wrong or whatever? Millions of people who listen to the Alex Jones Meltdown Hour probably could be wrong, but who knows? I heard this weird story about him that basically something happened where, you know, he did uncover one legitimate thing, and I can't remember what it was, and it was something kind of boring. But he did sort of uncover this one thing, and that's, like, what gave him some ability to move around in the world of news media. But I find that very hilarious because it's like, yeah, I mean, if it was my job to come up with a kooky conspiracy every day, it was just like, okay, now we're going to do the Helpful Snowman conspiracy show. 365 conspiracies in 365 days. 31 days, 31 conspiracies, 31 days. 31. Little Potoween joke for you. I'm sure if I came up with 365 conspiracies that I, you know, found through, like, news-type research, I'm sure I would stumble upon something that was, like, vaguely possibly true. Right? Like, that's going to happen. If you just have to talk into a microphone, it's, you know, the way I do a podcast is I'm like, hey, if you just talk into a microphone for, like, an hour every week, you'll probably say something funny. Or entertaining or interesting. Like, you'll probably have at least one sentence where someone's like, oh, that sentence was worthwhile. I don't know if it justified listening to this fucking show, but whatever. Here's what I wonder. I was talking to someone about this, and sometimes people, like, just don't, they don't want to go with you on the imagination train. And so I was talking about this, and they were just like, no, because this and no, because that. But I was like, okay, so there's, like, a lot of 9/11 truthers, right? Or not, I mean, that's, like, the conspiracy of our age, you know, and there's, like, a lot of JFK people and moon landing people and stuff. And I'm like, how come they don't, why don't people come up with shit like, or, you know, like, Holocaust deniers, right? But these are, like, too much in the modern age. Like, there's so much fucking physical evidence of that, that it's, like, pretty easy to prove that certainly something happened. I mean, I don't know exactly what the claim of a Holocaust denier is, but I think it would be, you'd be hard-pressed to prove, like, I don't know, man. I'm pretty sure something happened. The exact numbers could be different. The, you know, I don't know, the exact locations of things or the timeline could be different. But I'm fairly certain that something happened. As certain as I can be about an event that I did not see myself. I mean, or, like, okay, flat earthers. And they have all these stupid things that, like, you know, they're like, aha, now we gotcha. Like, one of my favorites is when it's like, well, how come I can't see the curvature of the earth? And I'm like, asshole. Because it's, like, so fucking huge that you can't see it. I mean, it's like, all right, imagine you're the size of a head of a pin and you're standing on an enormous inflated beach ball. It's going to look flat to you because your vision only goes so far. You know, can you see Mars all the time? No. Can you see, like, oh, the storm on Jupiter is doing good? No. So obviously you can't fucking see. Anyway, I don't know why I'm making arguments against the flat earth. My point is, people have these conspiracy theories, but I'm sort of boggled by the ones they pick because they pick these things that are, like, pretty easy to prove incorrect. And I don't know why people don't pick more things like about the Old West or something. Because, like, if you had some conspiracy theory about, like, the gold rush, I feel like you could get a lot more traction with that as far as, like, well, who's going to, how are you going to disprove that? You know what I mean? Like, or, Revolutionary War period conspiracy. I mean, if you looked into it a little bit and you're like, I'm going to come up with some good fucking conspiracy about, you know, whatever, Revolutionary War time. And it's like, I mean, nobody has a fucking photo that says that's not true. Yeah, I don't know. It seems like that's a ripe ground for conspiracy theorists. Like, I would really like to see conspiracy theorists. I'd like to see them abandon this Mandela effect. Because I feel like that's like the last refuge of the conspiracy theorist. I have to say, one thing that the internet has sort of killed, in a way, is the conspiracy theory. Not because there aren't, you know, a bajillion conspiracy theorists online. The opposite is definitely true. But because the information is so easy to find now. Oh, I just saw a fucking great shooting star. Okay, I made the wish. I did it. That was awesome. That was fucking scary because I'm like right at the airport and I see this thing streaking through the sky and I was like, oh, fuck. But it was fine. It's fine, guys. It's not an airplane crashing. It's not Lightning Crashes by the band Live either. Anyway. Yeah, the internet. It's like you can look up information and find fairly compelling evidence of things. And so it's harder to be a sort of hobbyist skeptic anymore. It's harder to be the guy who's like, what did happen to JFK? And here's like a bunch of theories. And like, if you had just looked into it, you would know a lot more about it than anyone else. Or like D.B. Cooper. What happened to D.B. Cooper? I always wonder that stuff, too. I'm like, will we ever find out? Like, will we find something that will definitively prove, like, where, what happened to D.B. Cooper? Or what happened to, what was the JFK assassination? Was it just fucking Lee Harvey Oswald? And he was just like, boom. I did it. If so, some pretty fine shooting. I don't endorse the activity itself, but as a feat, I don't know if you'd call that an athletic feat. As a skill-based feat, not bad. Not pretty impressive.
Pretty. Let's talk about all right. Two time. Let's talk about bum one, yeah. Asking the questions that nobody could. Like, where are the bone thoughts in? Are they in harmony? Do you're a helpful snowman.
I might just have to park in the economy lot. And then